Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson. Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you all the latest news, views and interviews from across the running world. So Ben, tell us what we got coming up on this week's show.
A former rugby union player and now PT, Ollie Foss retired from the game young and somewhat worse for wear. Since then, he's been on a voyage of discovery, focusing around mobility and what the human body is capable of. Speaking of human bodies, Rick... you had a birthday last week. How's your body feeling?
Yeah, now I'm officially a master's athlete. Well, over 35 anyway.
Right.
So I'm feeling largely the same.
Good.
But because I'm having a go at this mile,
yes.
I do think probably most people's best mile will happen pre-35, and right. I'm trying to make it happen post-35. So in some ways, I'm trying to sort of turn back time.
Got it. And what's that based on? Just how hard it's been to do the training?
Yeah, it's felt very intense.
Right.
Intense stuff. So, yeah, I've got some good sessions coming up actually this week, which is, it's kind of 200-metre based sessions.
Okay.
So 200 metres on.
Yep.
And you've got to try and do that 200 metres in about 35 seconds. So for me, that's like pretty much sprinting.
Yep.
And then you get the same amount of rest off, so you get 35 seconds rest.
Got
and
it.
Then you smash out another 200. So... yeah, it's very intense. I am enjoying it. It's very, very different to marathon training, which was the idea. So I'm actually very much enjoying a new sprinting challenge. And I'd recommend anyone to have a bash at a mile.
Yeah. Well, what we'll do is we'll once you've verified this training block with a legit sub-5 time, we'll put a piece up on the site.
Yeah, it needs to be kind of gold stamped, doesn't it?
Yeah,
this actually
works.
If you
don't do it, then no way. We're not sharing that with anyone.
Yeah.
But anyone who wants to, you know, improve their mile time, hopefully, will be able to follow your plan and see some success.
Yeah, no, that's the idea. And, you know, like we were saying last week, actually, a good mile has amazing knock-on benefits to other distances, right? So off the back of a mile, I'm hoping that I'll run my best 5K as well.
Right.
So... that's the hope, mate. That's the theory.
That's the theory. All right, well, we'll look forward to that in January, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, good. Right, well, I think we should get our guest in. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Ollie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you very much for the kind invitation. I'm looking forward to spending some time with you guys today.
So I'm really excited about this because I'm not sure I really know what mobility means. Could you give us a kind of overview of what we mean when we say mobility?
I think mobility is a slightly confusing in terms of what it kind of is. Mobility, in essence, is basically control of your body and joints and control in space. And I think it's something which has in the past been looked at as a kind of a warm-up activity or something which is a bit of a grey area, but there's actually some really good evidential stuff behind mobility, which is proven to be very, very effective when used in, you know, sort of training in environments and competition.
I think that most people would probably put mobility and flexibility and like being weak or being strong. Is it sort of flexibility with strength? Is that kind of like a good way of thinking about it?
Definitely. I mean, it's so the sort of equation for mobility is flexibility plus strength, which equals mobility. Yeah. So flexibility is a prerequisite for mobility, and it's something to not be ignored, but also something which is, I think, in the past we've got so focused on extensibility or range of motion passively. We haven't addressed the control aspect of movement, and the control aspect of movement is essentially what is mobility. And that's the your nervous system's way of creating a safe environment. And when you don't feel safe, your body responds in some different ways. But to put it very simply, mobility is control over your whole body, and especially starting with the nervous system and gaining more awareness of that.
So it's almost like the battle that takes place within yourself, a sort of your nervous system protecting your body versus what you want your body to do. Is that kind of where mobility helps?
Yeah, and it's really about gaining understanding and then creating a safe environment for your body to move in. Right. When it doesn't feel safe, it creates some instability and tightness, which is a slight misconception of what tightness is. And we're all kind of mechanically made up of the same tissues, bone structures. Obviously, some have some anatomical variations, but 9 times out of 10, we are made the same. The difference is between someone who's done a lot of mobility and who hasn't is someone has spent more time gaining that control and making their central nervous system feel safe, that they're capable to move in that environment. So tightness does exist. Is it actually what we think it is all the time? Might not be. I think if we were cut open today, all of us, which is probably not a nice thing to think about, under a sort of general anaesthetic, we would be, you and me would look the same. So our tissues would look very similar. The difference might be, from a physical point of view, from my side, I might have done a little bit more of this mobility stuff. So that's why I'm capable of achieving these different positions and ranges of motion. But we are made the same. It's just our way our brain has sort of programmed ourselves to be how we are.
That's really interesting when looking at it, because I would say a lot of runners say, well, I've got really tight hip flexors or something. Is that, do you think actually we should be talking in a different language about that? That's about not being safe moving in a certain range of motion or something.
Definitely. I mean, I think the hip flexors is a common complaint, and it's an area I think which we all struggle with, because you know we're sat down a lot and that doesn't help, and that gets, you know, sort of highlighted quite quickly, and especially with runners, they're in a lot of flexion, you know, and that movement pattern itself creates a lot of neurological tightness. Whether that's actual tightness of the tissue, I'm not too sure. Some of it's a bit of both from training, but the overriding conversation around mobility is gaining more actual control of that area. Once the hip can move like a hip, and once you've got some more sort of strength in that area. So weakness / tightness can be confusing, because people think they're tight, but is it actually a weakness which they're not used to being in that position a lot of? So it's a bit of both. You have to take some good some sides of it as well. I'm not completely down the line with everything. So but I like to take a lot of different things from different people, from different who I really respect, and then I've kind of merged it together into my own kind of philosophy. But based on what I've done in the last 5 years, I know that if you gain more control over your joints and your whole nervous system, theoretically you shouldn't feel stiff and tight all the time. Obviously, go and lift heavy weights, do lots of training, you're going to feel stiff and tight, but on the whole you shouldn't feel that that constant fatigue and tightness if you look after yourself in a slightly different way.
Well, let's jump back then to the start of your particular journey through this. So sort of, you've been working on this for about 5 years now. What was your start point? What sparked your interest?
So I grew up dancing. So I did a lot of contemporary dance. I did break dancing until I was about 16. It was pretty cool. Yeah. I did lots of gymnastics, and then I played professional rugby for 5 years, 5-6 years, and then I did the opposite. So I did no rotational training. I did no end range work. It was all very linear, very sort of closed chain. It was very heavy lifting, power based stuff, which is good for rugby. Mm-hmm. Not so good when you want to try and do other things after. So I think since stopping rugby, I've really tried to get back to how I used to maybe look at movement a bit differently. Right. Not look at movement or training sessions as like tick boxes in A1, A2, and just work through lists of stuff. Look at, you know, not sort of just training exercises, but training movement and being, because there is no such thing as functional movement. You know, we are just training movement patterns. And right. A squat exists because we've called it a squat, but really it's just a pattern of movement which exists for us to perform different tasks in. So, yeah, it's using a bit of both, and I think I'm much happier after not lifting weights every day.
Yeah.
Five sessions a week of lifting, and you know, it gets a bit monotonous. And I know there's a lot more to explore with movement as well.
I like the idea that obviously we're all, I mean, everyone will be conditioned to think of a certain posture or movement as the term that it's being given, whereas in fact it's just movement.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I think maybe stripping it right back down to how your body just behaves is a sort of a key thing. And for runners, that's super important because, you know, running is up and down. So that sort of, that in itself must be, cause a lot of sort of mobility, not issues, but sort of like red flags in terms of what needs to be addressed.
Definitely. I think I've got quite a few tri guys who train with me, and you know, I think the mental capacity for endurance events is insane. Like, I think it's incredible. I was in Australia and I saw the Ironman events out there, and I was like, you know, the guys really, really go for it, and it's so amazing. But I think some things they don't look at so much is their, like, the basics of their, they do all the amazing stuff in terms of their output, their loading, their nutrition, their sleep, everything is really, really calculated. But then one thing they don't look at quite so much, I don't think, is this kind of movement side. And it's because it might be a bit lateral, they might think it's not going to really conducively transfer to their activity, because they're just in a, you know, that sort of linear frame of mind. But if you can sort of work around that and have a different lateral sort of thinking mindset towards movement, I think the guys who have been training with me have really benefited from that, because it's different to what they do also with their training. So it's you know, using different, you know, points of the brain in terms of like space and perception, and not just maybe being so head down with some of the activities which they've been used to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a massive one is, you know, runners will encounter, you know, lower limb work. So ankles are usually very, very restricted.
Right.
Calf tightness, Achilles, feet intrinsic foot control, which I'm going to talk about a bit later as well. Sort of hips are quite locked up. Thoracic is a bit stiff as well. And that's all because I think they're very, again, strong in quite a narrow sort of plane of motion.
So I guess a lot of people listening to this podcast might be thinking of doing like a spring marathon, right? And traditionally that training program would start December or January. And probably traditionally a lot of people wouldn't, they'd think, what I need to do here is run X amount of miles a week. Hopefully I won't get injured, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And then I'll run a certain time at London or Brighton or Paris or whatever. Where can mobility come into that kind of training program for someone who's starting at the beginning?
I think mobility isn't, I think it shouldn't be sort of in like a pecking order of your training. I think it should be just part of how you are as a human, regardless of your activity or your specific event. I think it should be ingrained in the same way it's ingrained to do other stuff at the gym. So whether, you know, because unfortunately mobility in the past, it was looked at prehab, rehab, which is the same thing essentially,
yeah,
but just maybe had a bad stigma of people with bands doing external rotation. It's like, oh, this is a bit boring, let's just get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went through a phase of, oh, let's just foam roll, let's get a quick stimulus out of foam rolling. So it wasn't really paid the due course, which I think it is need, because if you can really get stuck into mobility, the benefits are really, really good. And I think if people are starting off from a beginner point of view, it's really being aware of their own body and being able to move every joint, how the joint should work. So for example, with the hips, can the hip rotate inwards and outwards easily? If there's a sticking block or a slight, or this is a bit tight, or I'm not used to this position, then that could highlight that potentially the hip isn't functioning like the hip. And then if the hip isn't working like the hip, then you're doing hours and hours of hip extension and flexion over and over again. Then you are going to encounter lower back tightness, hamstring tightness, hip flexor tightness. All these issues kind of have a knock-on effect. Mm. And the fundamental cause or symptom is from the fact that the hip or the joint itself isn't mechanically moving like how we want it to move.
Anyone who's not aware of what Ollie's doing, you should go on Instagram and check out at OllieFrostPT and just have a look at some of the videos that he puts up, because it will kind of give you more of an idea of what we're talking about. But were you unable to touch your toes? And now if you watch on Instagram, you're able to sort of reach behind yourself and like grab things and stuff like that. Is that?
Yeah, it was a defining point after rugby. So I stopped rugby, was a bit lost in terms of what I wanted to do in terms of direction of coaching. So I was doing just usual S&C work. Then I went on gymnastics Athletic Bodies, which is run by a guy called Christopher Summer. Christopher Summer coached a US Olympic team for years. I don't know how it was ages ago, but he's developed this amazing online and face-to-face seminars of levels of gymnastic-based strength training. And it goes back against the sort of control element again. And one of the activities was sitting in a straddle, so sit on the floor with your legs out to the side and just see how far you could go. And he put me on five blocks, so I basically couldn't hinge on my hips properly because my hips were so locked up and my back was so stiff and tight. So I was that was the defining moment when I was like, God, I was in a room with people who played no rugby, did no real S&C for their whole lives, but they were very, very in control of their own bodies. And that was a big sort of moment for me where I was like, okay, I spent so long in the gym, I was so strong at a very, very limited amount of movement. Right. And that was quite worrying because I had no control of my own sort of, range of motion. So that was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, because I'm quite a determined person, I was like, I'm going to get onto this and I'm going to personally try and change. And then as I started to develop more within myself, then my coaching reflected that. And then I got really into obviously more prehab and rehab with people as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just thinking about, are there any at home exercises that generally people could have a go at to test their own mobility or to improve their own mobility? Things that you'd recommend?
I think aside from the classic, just touch your toes, but just try and sit in a bodyweight squat. Take your shoes and socks off and see if you can squat with. Don't worry about your posture for your back. Just slouch in a squat and see if you can hold a deep squat for a couple of minutes. And you'll soon feel whether your hips are giving you this sort of pinching sensation or your lower back feels a bit tight or it's your ankle. And you'll soon flag out things from just very passive movements.
Yeah.
And then also if you can get to a bar and just hang, so see what your grip shape's like and see what your overall sort of capacity is like just to hold your own body weight. So squat and hang, I think, are two really good ones. And then the third one is just a cat camel or a cat cow, okay. And just trying to perform that really slowly, and you'll see how much you can control each vertebrae for your spine. And if your spine looks like it's blocked, is it when you're going up and down the wave of the cat cow, then that's going to quickly highlight that you have very limited sort of spinal mobility as well. And obviously if you don't have control over your spine, you will struggle to perform tasks in terms of like hip stuff and shoulder work as well. So spinal work, hips with the squat, and then with the hang for sort of basic strength and grip as well.
And you call it the cat cow?
Cat cow or cat camel. I'm not sure what the right variation is.
Is that a yoga move?
That's a yoga move, right. Yeah. So that's just like the classic like on all fours in the quadruped position where you just perform the...
You arch your back up,
yes,
and then you sort of drop
down.
Your...
That's it, yeah. So we probably did it when we were younger, sort of angry cat and nice cat.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But just trying to do it really slowly, and that's when it goes back to the control element with mobility, that most of the movements are done with very precise control, which we're not used to because we usually train and live so fast. So it's always run fast, swim fast, live fast. And so mobility is nice because it's a bit more in tune, I think, with your own self a little bit as well.
Yeah, we've had a guest on previously, Annie, who came and talked to us about yoga for running, and I think that there was not just a physical side of it which helped sort of gain control over some aspects of your breath perhaps or things like that you don't normally focus on, but obviously all the time out that yoga offers, you can switch off for a little bit. And I think that this mobility sounds a bit like that. You can sort of refocus on perhaps one single movement for a while and just kind of get good at that.
Yeah, I think breath work is completely underrated as well. I think it's a whole minefield of information which people just aren't aware of. And it's like, personally for myself, I'm still learning a lot about the power of breath and using sort of, deeper breathing and diaphragmatic breathing in terms of going into your parasympathetic part of your nervous system, which is your rest and digest side. Because I think a lot of us, we live in the sympathetic side, which is the fight or flight. So that's obviously quite stressful. You don't breathe very deeply. It's sort of apex breathing, which is quite high up into the chest. So when you use the power of the breath in terms of the deeper diaphragmatic breathing, I think you control movement much better. You're more aware of what you're doing. You're more in tune. I think you're more connected with what you're doing as well. And there is obviously times where you've got to flip in between the fight or flight to get your heart rate up and get yourself going a little bit faster. But I think the majority of our lives are spent in this sympathetic, quite stressful state anyway. So I think people's training only reflects that, and then it's this cycle of stress and, you know, short of breath, and it's a bit of a nasty cycle and draining your battery quite a lot as well. So it's how you then do that is, you know, taking some time out and working on your breath. I think in isolation is a great skill to do.
Yeah. Do you think that mobility is something you should do as a 30-minute class, or is it something that should be part of your day-to-day lifestyle?
I think it should be a daily routine. I think it should be, I mean, people say to me, oh, how much do you do this, or how much do you train? And I think the answer for me is, I think it's become an opportunity to just move when I can. I mean, I'm privileged. I don't have to sit at a desk all day. So that's an easy one for me to not have to do that. But I just try and move with every opportunity, whether that's with clients or where I've got 10 minutes just to grab a little bit here and there. And it's the accumulation of, you know, the old saying of putting it in the bank. And it's you just over the week, you just putting together more and more movement. And I think that in itself is a great nourishment for your body. I don't think you can do enough, you know, enough mobility. You won't get completely taxed from it. You don't get overly tired. It just makes you more aware of what you're doing, and it only has the benefits of more efficiency when you are doing other tasks, and it makes things much easier. So when I've gone back to gymnastics when I'm a little bit older, it's made it much easier because I have to learn about just the skill element now, and I have to learn about just the coordination and timing, versus when I was younger, I would have had to battle with restrictions from a joint point of view or mobility aspect. So now it's much easier because, well, not completely easy, but I can just pick up things easier because I don't have to worry about, oh, does my arm flex that way, or can I get the hip into that position? Whereas if you spend all the time doing the nuts and bolts of it, then you can have some fun, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you could argue the same thing about running, actually. But you see elite runners side on, and the kind of angle they're making with their legs, maybe their training legs almost horizontal behind. And part of that is about speed. But I think if you didn't have that mobility, actually there's probably a kind of ceiling at which you could arrive at. And actually you can't get further than that because your body can't move in that way. It wouldn't even necessarily have to be a heart and lungs limitation.
I completely agree, and it's I think I get it more in sort of an S&C sense, where clients have come to me, they've done CrossFit or they've done lots of lifting, and they've sort of plateaued, and that's not because of their, you know, nutrition, their, you know, their recovery or their programming. It's purely down to the fact that they don't have enough space within the joint to move. So, you know, it causes that natural restriction, then more restrictions come off the back of that, so then other tissues around it will start to compensate, and that's when you get, you know, that's when you can become slightly, you know, not imbalanced, but you are just putting more load into different areas which shouldn't really be there. So going back to what I said earlier, it's fundamentally addressing the joint capsule first. Does the joint work like a joint? Yes, great. And then we can sort of load it from there. Versus before, I think we've only really concentrated on the passive and just the flexibility side. And we haven't really addressed, we've thought that weights in essence would take care of the structural work, which it does to a certain degree, but it doesn't really, again, add that control aspect as well.
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people might say, like, oh, I've got a hip impingement or something like that, which may well be just their natural shape, right?
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily, so it's not necessarily that the impingement's the bad thing, it's just not addressing the knock-on effect of it. And that's where mobility helps, right? Because it's not just, oh, I've got an impingement, I must train around it. I've got an impingement, how do I train with it? Is that kind of more...
Definitely, yeah. And I think, you know, people are quite quick to sort of just say, oh, I've got an issue, so let's just kind of put it to one side, or let's just label myself as just having this impingement, you know. I think people get too bogged down with, like, what's wrong with them all the time. Like, they'll always say, like, something's always going on. I think if you just take a step back and remove yourself slightly and think, okay, there's an area which is clearly sensitive, and there may be some inflammation. I'm not categorically injured because I'm still performing. So how do we sort of desensitize the area? And that can be through, you know, more mobility, more stretching, more just general sort of movement, which is not so like invasive to that area. And I think if you go off the premise of wanting to make every part of your body work as well as you can, maybe not like optimally or be a perfectionist, but if you have that kind of mindset, then because everything is so connected, other issues should hopefully respond a little bit better. You know, I think if someone's had a tight hip for so long, then you've got to be thinking, okay, well, what are you doing to not necessarily help your hip, but what are you doing to help your whole entire makeup, you know?
If someone came to you, Ollie, and said, right, I've got a finite amount of time here, like lots of our listeners are quite sort of time poor, I guess, and they said, right, I'm training for a marathon, I'm prepared to run four times a week, and I'm prepared to do two lots of, like, we'd call S&C or mobility. How would you go about working that into a tight schedule? Is it something that you can put with the S&C work or with the running, or how would it work?
So for guys who are have similar sort of setups, I always say to them to integrate the mobility into their training sessions. So if they've got like a superset window or they've got like a rest period, then that's a perfect opportunity to do X, Y, and Z of mobility. And it's like, the thing is, mobility isn't hard. It's very, very simple movements, but it's just done with control. It's not like made up stuff. It's just like movement which we've done for thousands of years, but it's just done with a very precise and focus, and that's basically it. And you can easily sneak in mobility easily into people's programs without it having to load up their time throughout the day or week. And obviously, if you've got more time to do it, great. But if not, if you just started integrating some basic stuff today after this podcast, great, because your mind is suddenly thinking a little bit more about not just going to the gym and doing my compound lifts. It's like, okay, I'm doing a compound lift, but I'm going to help sort of match that with some mobility. And I think that's what we haven't done for a long time. We've done loads of strength stuff, so the curve's gone up quite a lot, and then the mobility curve hasn't really gone up with it, or the flexibility or the range of motion. So then we then get the restrictions. So if we matched it from the start 50-50, we would be completely fine, I'm sure of it. But we didn't, and I didn't either. And then you pay the price for it later in your life, because then you could have the niggles. But then what have you done for the last 10 years? Oh, yeah, I've lifted weights for 10 years and I've played sport and I've done no stretching. Okay, well, we've got to start again a little bit.
Before Ollie answers this, Rick, sure. I'm going to ask you, if there was one part of the body that every runner should focus on in terms of improving mobility, what do you think it would be?
I would say, and I'm not an expert, as you know, Ben, but I'd say it's the hips. But that's possibly bringing some of my own tightness in hips to the to the table. But I would, that would be my guess.
I think the hips. I'm going to say ankles.
Right.
Nice. Well, they're both really good areas to work
on. Yes.
Got
yes.
it.
Yes.
Nailed it.
But so I think for runners specifically, and also for everyone, but I mean, for running, because of the impact and the load, I would go more to the feet first. Right. And to look at the feet in terms of, you know, is the foot stable? Because if you imagine the foot and it's like almost like a Jenga block, and the Jenga block's not quite steady, then the blocks above it aren't going to be doing the job properly. So perfect alignment is non-existent. Your body isn't symmetrical, it's asymmetrical, because of the right reasons, because that's how we breathe, that's how we rest, that's how we recover, that's how your internal organs are packed onto the right. So your pelvis is naturally going to be more rotated. So to get the perfect symmetry in your whole body is not going to happen. But from a feet control point of view, your feet should be very, very stable. And obviously people have got ankle issues of more pronation and things like that, which is becoming more and more apparent because of the fact we've been cramped in shoes for so long. I think you've got the Vivos on today.
I have, especially. I was like, I need to be wearing some ergonomically sound footwear for Ollie here. So yeah,
and I think that's the best way. And I think, you know, we've been cramped in shoes for so long, and the feet have become almost deconditioned, and the sort of neural connections between your brain and your feet have just like been dead and just switched off. So if your feet don't have the amount of control in terms of stability just on one leg and two legs. If you have poor toe extension, so that's the ability to lift your toe up quite high whilst keeping the other toes flat. I think these things can have a big impact to the joint. So the ankle joint then won't be able to flex and extend properly. If that isn't really as efficient as we'd like it, then unfortunately the problems just run up the chain, and then we get more torque on the knee. The hip can become a little bit more internally rotated, and then that's when you get all your tightness. And that's just feet to be in control on both feet, bare feet, and then single leg work is massive. Being able to sort of segment your toes, which is I can't really do either, which is hard, but being able to move your toes unilaterally, individually as well, you know, that's really important skills to have, and something which I think it's, again, it's getting more popular, like with the Vivo work.
Toga, I've heard it.
And the toe spreaders and being able to, you know, it's quite a funny look, but, you know, it's creating more neural connections between the feet and the brain. And then once that's in set in place, I think you should hopefully have a sounder base literally to work from. So yeah, feet, ankles are massive.
So I mean, a lot of people listening might consider it too late for themselves to address any issues that they might have, but you're sort of more of the thinking that it's never too late, and also don't wait for the issue.
Definitely, and I think it's having a preventative mindset, and, you know, not being reactive, being proactive. And it's don't wait for something to occur too much. Be sort of a bit more on the ball with it, and just have the mindset that you can really clear a lot of this stuff up at the early stage before waiting, before, you know, you've really hurt yourself or the problem has persisted so much.
Yeah.
I think one of the good sayings is you will always regret not training in the position that you got injured in. Right. So, you know, how many times do you practice sort of rolling your ankles in the way which you normally roll your ankle? So I think if we don't prepare our bodies for the eventuality enough, and that goes from maybe overly safeguarding our training, and again going back to that linear approach and being a bit more lateral thinking in terms of the rotational aspect of your body, but again being more preventative in terms of your mindset, and just thinking about this is going to give you so much more longevity and so much more time as well, you know, and you hopefully won't, if you get injured, the level of injury will hopefully be a lot less. So if you practiced some ankle work, then you roll your ankle quite badly, it might be like a grade one, and you might be back on your feet in 2 weeks. If you've done no ankle work, you might be looking at grade two or grade three. So to being a bit more aware of stuff, and don't just wait until you're injured as well, is a big one.
And as far as age is concerned, I mean, like, I guess at 50 or even as mid-30s, you and I, we're probably not going to be Simone Biles, are we?
No.
We've missed the boat on Olympic gymnastics. But do you think that actually gains can be made regardless of age?
I think so, definitely. I think it just goes back to a mindset. I think people just use age as, oh, I'm getting slightly older, so that means I don't have to move as much, whereas it should be the opposite. You should be getting older, wanting to move more.
Yeah.
And, you know, being more, you know, I think collagen does change slightly over the age of 40, so your natural flexibility does get decreased. But that's no stop to people to becoming, you know, you can stay mobile for as long as you want. It's very much down to you wanting to do a little bit more.
Yeah, and you think we're all living longer, aren't we? And actually, mobility as well as being like a running thing is actually, it's a way to stay happy, I think. If you stay mobile and kind of functional into your old age, I think that's a huge reason why mobility should be looked at, I think.
I know, Ollie, that was, to begin with, just a fantastic start for probably myself and Rick in terms of learning
for
more,
sure.
But hopefully for everyone else who was listening, I'm going to build in some mobility.
Absolutely.
I need some. I'm terrible. So this was great to meet you, to have you in, and to just to introduce us all to something a bit more important that we should perhaps be looking at.
That's it. Thanks very much for having me on. That's great.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So a bit of news hot off the press.
Okay.
But it's a sort of it's repeat news in many ways. Is it,
so it's not that hot then?
Well, it's happened now.
Okay.
But it's sort of legacy news.
Is it sort of reheated news?
Perhaps.
So it's hot, but it's not...
It's hot, but re-hot.
Okay.
Right.
Re-hot news.
Well, it's basically Russia...
Oh, yeah?
...have been banned from global sport for the next 4 years, which obviously includes 2020 Olympics and actually the 2022 World Cup, but pretty much everything else in between and beyond for the 4 years. Athletes who can prove, this is the important bit, athletes who can prove they were untainted by this doping scandal and the previous, I assume, will be able to compete under the neutral flag, which has happened previously. Also, the Russian Anti-Doping Agency has 21 days to appeal this ban. So we'll see what happens between that. But I mean, considering that Russia have been banned from competing as a nation in athletics since 2015... Don't think there's much chance of that ban being moved.
No, and they've been fairly slow and unrepentant, haven't they, about the whole thing?
Yeah, so the ban comes off the back of their anti-doping agency basically just not fulfilling WADA's requirements in terms of like proving that there hasn't been lots of cheaty. So this is another 4-year ban for the Russians.
Well, I think fair enough, actually. It's the same rules for everyone. And yeah, if you're not complying, then there has to be some sort of sanction, doesn't there?
Yeah, and comments from WADA were pretty strict. The vice president, whose name will escape me now, but she sort of commented that it wasn't, you know, banning wasn't enough, and there needs to be further action and stuff like that. So you know, they're taking quite a hard line stance on it, which is as it should be because they're the governing body to stop doping. So it's important.
Yeah, and I guess if you are a clean athlete in Russia, and of course. There are many, many of those. Hopefully, being able to compete under a sort of neutral flag.
Mm.
So it opens the door, doesn't it, for people who are within Russia who do want to compete clean. So that's, I think that's an important kind of caveat of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because you can't just paint everyone with the same brush.
Exactly.
Yep.
Great re-hot news. Thanks so much.
Re-hot news is what we do best.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Ollie Frost, and to you for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, and we will see you again next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.